Hey guys, it's Albert. We're going to kick things off for the millionth time by talking about Antonio Brown, the Steelers, Juju Smith-Schuster. Then Jenny and Connor will come in for the news. And as always, we'll wrap things up with a six-pack of your Twitter questions. Let's go. All right, welcome in. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. We're back. I think it's 15 days out to draft day now. And we're going to get into a lot of draft stuff over the course of the next hour or so. But I want to kick things off by the story that just won't seem to go away. And I'm sure all of you out there, if you're listening to this podcast, saw it on Monday. The continued back and forth between Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster. And at this point, I don't know why anybody's surprised anymore. I'm not sure why anybody would look at what Antonio Brown's doing here and say it in any way doesn't match what we've seen over the course of his career. Now, this isn't to say he's not a great player. This isn't to say that he wasn't one of the hardest working guys on that roster. I would say for most of the years he was there, he was the hardest working guy in that roster based on what people in that building say. He did a lot of things right, but this is always who he's been. And I think proof positive is out there for you. The Steelers are the most player-friendly organization in the NFL. They may be one of the most player-friendly organizations in all of sports. They let guys be themselves. They pay guys. They have shown over and over again a willingness to absorb guys who have issues in their past, big personalities. They've always been able to bring people in and make it work. And so the fact that there's this player who is incredibly talented, who they've paid three times, found a way to wear out his welcome, should tell you everything you need to know. Everything you need to know is right there for you. And so if I'm Mike Tomlin, if I'm Ben Roethlisberger, if I'm any of these guys, I'm sending Antonio Brown a thank you note for what happened on Sunday and Monday, because it just validated the idea that the Steelers had to move on. It makes Ben look like he might be justified in having clashed with Antonio Brown. Without even getting to the fact, this makes Juju Smith-Schuster look even better than he did before. Confirms that the MVP thing was a major part of why he walked out in Week 17, which seems petty as hell. And now, for Mike Tomlin, he's got something his team can rally around. He's got an actual opponent. He's got a villain there. And so I'm going to bring Jenny and Connor in. I think what's interesting about this, too, is sort of how there, I think there's a tendency out there just to side with the player no matter what in situations like this. And I think I said it a few weeks ago. I mean, it's possible that everybody here was an a-hole. You know what I mean? Like, every single person involved in their own way might have been an a-hole, and that's why the thing blew up. But I think the fact that Antonio Brown wasn't able to assimilate into a place that, again, has been very accepting of different personalities, very able to absorb big personalities, very able to just kind of take on whatever they need to take on for winning's sake, tells you all you needed to know, and no one should be in the least surprised by what we saw over the weekend.
I wouldn't say that there's a tendency to side with the player, though, Albert. I would disagree with that. I feel like in most situations,
you don't think there are people who automatically side with the player?
There might be some people who automatically side with the player, but I do think in most situations, people are more inclined, for whatever reason, and sometimes it's very hard to understand, they're more inclined to side with the team or, you know, the establishment, right? Yeah. I don't feel like people always are on the player's side. But I do agree in this case, like, if you're Oakland, you're thinking, what did we invite into a locker room that we're trying to rebuild?
Right.
And, you know, if, like you said, it does give you, you know, in Pittsburgh, sort of an easy foil to play off of. I did think it was interesting. So we saw, you know, Le'Veon Bell posted his exchange with James Conner. And I do think
it's like you're on your own.
Well,
bro.
No, I do think that. Yeah. And I feel like, honestly, for him, he probably feels a need to distance himself from Brown, because I think he has gotten lumped in with him. And I think he had his own concerns that he raised, obviously, when I spoke with him, you know, about some of the other reasons in addition to the, you know, the guaranteed money in the Steelers offer that sort of made him want to move on from Pittsburgh. He I don't think he and Brown were particularly close. He said they never talked during his year away. The only time they talked was when Brown tried to invite him to Oakland. So I do think from Bell's perspective, I feel like he probably saw that and was like, I'm going to post this text message from Connor to sort of prove that I wasn't, it's not the same situation as Brown, because there has been, I do feel like the two of them have gotten unfairly grouped.
They were very different situations.
To be clear,
I mean, Antonio Brown had his contract redone twice.
Right.
Like, twice was made, like, one of, I mean, I think twice was made the second highest paid player on the team. Once was made, with years left on his contract, the highest paid receiver in league history. Like, they showed time and time again that they were willing to reward him, that they valued him. And so I can see that. Like, with Bell, it's like maybe a little bit different in that he had never gotten to that point where, you know, he had gotten the huge contract for him. Now he's offered a good contract, but he never got to that point. The other difference, I think, too, is, like, Bell wasn't under contract last year. Like, you can say what you like, and look, I don't think what Bell did was smart, but like, he wasn't under contract. He was exercising a right of his, whereas Brown was under contract, walked away from his team in week 17. So to me, that's like, those are two very, very, very different things.
Right. And that's, so my point was, you know, I don't think that it means that there are still no remaining issues in Pittsburgh. However, the way that Brown has reacted makes it sort of easier for them to move on, because people will say, well, you know, clearly Brown was in the wrong here. And so that's sort of, it's easy to sort of just push everything away with that.
Now, you'd hope, Connor, that Mike Tomlin's going to sit down with Ben Roethlisberger now, and no matter what's said publicly, right, says, listen, dude, like, we need you to set the tone here, because now you are by far the highest profile guy on the team. You are by far the, I think by far, I'd have to look this up again, but I think by far the highest paid guy on the team too. Like, not like, it's not close anymore. And so, like, everyone's looking to you. So we need you to, we need you to handle all of this a certain way. And, like, if I'm Mike Tomlin, that becomes, like, the first thing I'm doing in the offseason program, is approaching Ben Roethlisberger and saying, we need to come to an understanding on all of this.
And also probably a conversation that should have happened 5 years ago.
Probably, yeah. Yeah.
Before we got to this point. But I'm the only one that, like, Twitter is full of obnoxiously rich men settling petty disputes. Like, that's what the media is for.
Oh, I enjoyed it.
There's someone running the country that does this every day on Twitter. So what is the bit, you know? And here's the thing. I'm not taking up for Antonio Brown here, but I'm saying, like, what if his entire reason for leaving Pittsburgh, what if this is all the truth-telling series? You know what I mean? Like, this is what Ben Roethlisberger is really like. Maybe this is what Juju Smith-Schuster is really like. Yep. Would I have chosen better evidence than a complimentary direct message from college? Yes, but, like, maybe, you know, it's one of those situations where, you know, you're acting nice, but you're really not nice. And, you know, maybe Antonio Brown is Serpico. Maybe he's the truth-teller. That nobody is believing.
I can appreciate, like, I honestly, and I think he won. Like, I've said that over and over again.
100%.
He definitely won. He got a huge raise for, like, almost no reason, right? Like, he got a huge raise for acting like an a-hole.
Pittsburgh, to the Bay Area.
So, like, yeah, I mean, like the guy won. It's like, why do you, like it's just, it's almost like, I don't know, like, almost like there's some regret there or something. Like, he can't let it go.
I think that there's a lingering, like, I mean, you know, we're going to get to Aaron Rodgers later in the podcast, but there's a little bit of that in so many great players, right? It's like an inability to let perceived slights or losses go.
Right.
You know what I mean? And this is all it was to him, is Juju Smith-Schuster won the team MVP. It drove him crazy, and so there's an inability to let that go. And if you're a good coach, you harness it. You know, you recognize it and you move forward. And if not, you let him go.
I think this is also a both things can be true situation. And that's, like, what the point I was poorly making earlier. Brown didn't act appropriately on his way out of Pittsburgh, right?
Yes.
He quit week 17 and he's acted bizarrely ever since, right? But I do think there's some validity to the things that he has said that were frustrations for him. And so I think it's...
I think the Ben criticism is totally fair.
Right.
Because you hear that, he's not the first person we've heard that from. So
right.
It confirms some of that.
Right,
you know?
Right.
It also doesn't mean everything that he's saying is valid, you know?
Correct.
Like, I think the attacks on Juju... I mean, look. Like, being pissed off that, like, he won team MVP is so stupid. Like, it's an arbitrary award. I think it's...
Was it stupid when it happened with Tom Brady? the patron of the week.
Yeah, patron of the week.
I mean, I was annoyed at Connor Orff when he was mentioning the 11 a.m. note at the Star Ledger, and I thought I really had a great story that morning.
The 11 a.m. note caused a lot of problems.
The 11 a.m. note caused a lot of strife at the Star Ledger, so I think we could relate. You know, do you ever have report of the week at your college newspaper? We sure did. That caused a lot of internal strife.
That would have been a huge problem for me.
It probably would have been a problem at Ohio State, too.
See, we're all, like, we are all Antonio Brown. We are all Antonio Brown.
Plus, you also probably,
MVP, I don't know. I guess, all right, so this may be like an
us. It would drive me insane.
This may be an us problem then. This may be like, and you know what, I think sometimes we look at it and we say, like, these guys make so much money and they've got such a big stage and it's like, they shouldn't care about that.
It would drive me insane. I'd be like, I'm the best freaking receiver in the NFL and I've been.
But would you storm out of work 2 days later?
Absolutely. Like 100%. 100%.
I'm going to be scared to cut Connor off at any point in the podcast. Jenny,
you reacted to my tweet earlier about like the you know all the videos that the teams put up about like the start of the offseason program, which like if you haven't watched them, like go on Twitter and every team four last week, four this week, there'll be 24 of them next week, right? Where the teams at the first day of the offseason program, there's just dramatic. They put up these videos on Twitter with dramatic music, right? And it's people walking through doors. It's bro hugs. It's like guys putting weights on the squat rack, like very, very dramatic, like very dramatic telling of like pretty normal stuff. And so, like Connor. I think we should like just kind of like take everything. God, I'm taking a while to get there, aren't I?
No, just set the scene of what happened to Connor on his way to work today.
What happened on the way to work?
I did fall twice.
So I didn't get that. So that actually happened.
Oh yeah. Yes,
that actually
happened. Legitimately fell up the escalator, off the subway, and then again up the stairs on the way to the elevator.
Wow.
Twice. I'm like a one.
It might be time to like pack it in and go home when that happens.
Yeah, thinking about it.
Yeah. I mean, but if we're going to compare everything to like pro athletes, and if Connor's willing to storm out of work, like if he doesn't get MMQB Reporter of the Week this week, thinks he did a good job, then like, you know, maybe we should put everything in pro athlete terms, right? So we can have the dramatic. We can have Bet and Mark like tweet out dramatic videos of all of us showing up here when we show up, right? And then like,
and then there's Orr falling up.
It's funny that you brought up that note because I just got so angry.
Sources, Connor Orr.
Oh my God.
Connor Orr.
I shouldn't have brought up the 11 a.m. note.
If I wasn't in the 11 a.m. note, and then when you were a first-year person at the paper, you also had to work like an overnight shift.
Uh-huh.
And if I wasn't in the 11 a.m. note for something I felt I deserved to be in, like I was a bull in a china
shop
during that
night.
How long
did it last? Was it like 2 days, 3 days? Like how long?
I mean, there are
it?
Times that I still remember not being in it because I felt like I should have.
How long would it take to get over it, though? I'm saying, like, was it like?
I don't know if I'm over it yet.
It's been years.
Yeah, I started working there 10 years ago.
So was this Manahan then, or who was this? Like,
No. It was the higher ups, the head editor in chief. It was like they had an 11 a.m. meeting, and they would put out this note and be like, "Great job to you know Joe Schmo for his profile on such and such."
Would you get pissed if you didn't make it?
Well, I think everyone would felt a little bit. You know, you want it's like the equivalent of your office not retweeting your story or something.
Okay. I legitimately one time like slammed a book on my desk and just left for an hour.
What did you do?
Walked around Newark for an hour.
Do you remember what you did that you thought deserved to be in the 11 a.m. note that was omitted?
Yes, I do.
Wow.
I wrote a story about. I found like a bunch of people who only played one NFL football game, mm-hmm. and then their careers were over for some weird reason, and like spent hours on the phone with like these 85-year-old people, and like they like to be on the phone, you know, and so it just took so much time and so much energy, and then it was buried in the paper, and then
it didn't make
get,
the 11
you know, and if you weren't on the front cover of the section, then you didn't get in the note because nobody read inside the. Let's move on because I'm getting.
We were going to bring in
again.
Brandon to have hear his take.
Yeah,
this
Brandon,
might be a
we need your
segue.
Antonio Brown tape.
Well, Connor
cools off for a second.
Yeah, so I'm a little lost as to why he's doing this. First off, I'm a fan of him. I like him. Mm-hmm. I know he's a little aloof. I know he has a colorful personality.
And mustache at times.
And mustache. But I don't get it. Like, why embarrass this dude? He was good to you the 2 years
still
that
pissed
you-
about the MVP thing.
I mean, that's
his
a small
equivalent of the 11 a.m. note. He's not willing to let it go.
That's
like he's Connor Orr, I guess present day Connor Orr, right? Because he's still holding on to it.
Maybe that's why I just identify with Antonio in this. You know,
but you don't play for them anymore. You play for the Raiders now.
To be fair,
it doesn't matter. You need to destroy.
If Antonio Brown's still hanging on to it, right? That's for a lot like shorter period of time than Connor Orr has held on to this 11 a.m. note business.
It's only a matter of weeks. Yeah. We're on like year 7 for Connor Orr.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yeah, but for me, you know, you moved on. You're in Oakland now. Well, I don't know where in California they are right now. San Francisco, sorry. Yeah, you moved on. You're with a new team. Why are you even concerned with this? You got what you wanted. You left. Move on, man. Stop worrying about what Pittsburgh is doing. Worry about what the Raiders are doing.
I could see it like being like something so small as like maybe there's somewhere on the Steelers website there's like a Juju Smith-Schuster like highlight video that went up, right? Like, and Antonio Brown thinks it's like,
yes.
Oh, you're turning the page, are you?
Yeah.
Like, we'll see about that. Like, it could be something.
He could have
like,
felt subtweeted.
It could be something like that, like that he feels like was
that
just
sparked it.
Like, you're twisting the knife now, you know? Like, that's my team still, even though I'm gone, and I acted like a jerk on the way out.
Yeah, well, the only thing that I can think of, and this is something that he's talked about on LeBron James' show, is controlling the narrative. He's very big on, let me tell my side of the story, because sometimes franchises, teams, they don't necessarily tell the correct narrative or the correct story. And I understand him. I understand when he says that. But at the same time, it's like, come on, bro. Like, you're on the Raiders now.
Yeah, but how crazy do you have to be to, like Juju, like, was literally, like, how commendable is that? That like a guy who was a star at USC, right? Like, and that's one of those schools where you're king of the world, right? Is like humble enough to say, like, you know what? I still have a lot to learn. I'm gonna just randomly reach out to one of the best receivers in the NFL. Like, that makes Juju look great. Like that, makes him, like that makes him look awesome. Like, so how crazy do you have to be to think like, oh yeah, I got him now, and you're tweeting? It just doesn't make any sense.
And a lot of college a lot of college football players, you know, reach out to NFL players for advice. There's nothing wrong with that. So
there's nothing wrong with anybody doing it in any profession.
Exactly. So I don't get what Antonio Brown was trying to do.
Right.
But I'm not him. I'm not in his world.
It's
so
like, I guess it may be like be a weird like, you think you have it all figured out. You don't have it figured it out. You don't have it figured out.
I taught you everything you know.
Right. Kind like of one deal. Of those types of things. Yeah. All right. Okay, so we're going to jump into the news right now. We're going to leave Connor's 11 a.m. note grudge where it is.
I feel bad that I feel bad.
No.
Didn't know the feelings ran so deep.
I need a beer.
I mean, I could certainly see us revisiting this next week or the week after that
could become a threat.
Maybe all month. Okay, news item number one. Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers responded to last week's Bleacher Report story. This is by Tyler Dunn. That dove into his relationship with Mike McCarthy, telling ESPN Wisconsin the opinions in the piece were, quote, super slanted, and that some of the facts presented were the result of, quote, outright lies. Now, that was interesting about it, you know, and I think we all know Tyler pretty well. I think you went to school with Tyler, right, Connor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, obviously this was the result of a lot of work.
I read somewhere he said he talked over 50 people for
it. So obviously the result of a lot of work. And I thought what was interesting about it was how Rodgers' response really focused on two guys. And the whole thing was about how Aaron holds grudges. And he was basically like confirming that, right? Like, there was that piece of it I thought was really interesting. He was like confirming I hate Greg Jennings and I hate your Michael Finley. So he sort of like confirmed a piece of the article in responding to And really took it, like, narrowed it down, like, oh, it's only a couple people. Well, no, he talked to a lot of people. It's just these are the guys who are willing to go on the record.
Yeah, and I don't want to speak for any, you know, anybody involved in this, but what I found interesting was that, you know, if Aaron is so upset about where it ended now, right, you know, why didn't he just say the things that he said about Mike McCarthy yesterday? 5 months ago when they were in the middle of the season, like, all of this could have
gone away.
You know what I mean? You can't have your cake and eat it too, right? You can't force a guy out of town and then yell at everybody for disrespecting him afterwards because you were the reason that he's not there anymore.
Right.
You're the singular most he was the winningest coach in the NFC over the last, like, 15, 20 years, something like that. I mean, you know.
And it was so over the top. Like, I don't know. Do you guys listen to it, right? Like, it was really over the
it
top.
Was
like
rehearsed.
Like,
it was.
Like, hey, if you see Mike McCarthy on the street, shake his hand. Like,
yeah.
It was, like, so over the top, you know? And, like, I don't know. It just, like, and I don't, like, I mean, look, like, I think that there's probably, if they, I think there's probably the personal relationship there's going to be fine long term between McCarthy and Rodgers. There's no doubt that the, like, professional relationship was super strained.
The visible, like, eye rolling, the, like, cursing, the snapping off of the chin straps, like, the death stares that you're making at the sideline, like, we can all see that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You invited all of this in. You know what I mean? In order to get the change that you wanted. And now you got it. And I'm just saying, you're not allowed to now say that we should all treat this guy fairly because you didn't, you know?
Yeah, and I also felt like there was the tactic there, too, which was to pick one thing out, which was the conversation with Murphy, and attack one piece of the story to try to discredit the whole thing. Like, that's a tactic. And I think we've all done stories like this in the past where, like, that sort of becomes a tactic. It's like, okay, I'm, like, going to pick one thing out. I'm going to try and discredit that, and then I hope that that'll discredit the whole thing. And it sort of felt like that was the tactic that they took there, too.
Right. Take a narrow, okay, I'm going to attack one or two things and sort of ignore the greater context that, you know, this was reported with, you know, four times more people than that,
right.
And not all of whom were quoted, you know, or even referenced in the story, right?
Yeah.
I mean, if you, like you said, Connor, talked to over, what, 40, if he said he talked to over 40 people, like, most of those people don't even get mentioned in the story, but they help you reach, you know, conclusions about what happened there. The thing that's amazing to me still, and I, Albert, you and I talked about this, I still just don't understand how it seems to me the easiest thing in the NFL, if there was a difficult coach-quarterback relationship, would be to just say to your quarterback, well, Belichick MFs Brady, and, like, you know, that happens, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I don't understand how we've gotten to the point where there's so many of these dynamics where, you know, through accounts that people have written, the quarterback is sort of running wild, right? You know, we've heard this with Rodgers.
Well, Connor's our expert
we've
on,
heard
like,
this
being
with Roethlisberger.
So.
But, you know, it's like there is a very easy example, right? Like, you can say, okay, quarterbacks today are treated differently, but, you know, Rodgers and Roethlisberger are not that far off from age from Brady, right? And it just seems like there's that obvious corollary for any head coach to say, look how they do it, we're going to do it similarly. And sure, you know, clearly Brady and Belichick have had some tension, you know, we saw that last season. However, the foundation of their relationship has always been that Brady's treated like everyone else on the team. And I just don't know why more coaches aren't able to replicate that using that as the model.
I think I think the reason why it's hard is because I think other coaches, like, if you're going to be that hard on someone, you almost need instant results. And it's hard. I think with Brady and Belichick, there's such a, first of all, that, like, Brady's from a previous generation. Like, I'm, think Brady was probably coached this way when he was, like, a high school kid, you know? And so I think he's from a previous generation, which some of the other guys are too, to be fair.
All right, we're not talking about 20-year-olds here.
I do think a piece of it is, if you're not getting results, I think if you don't get results quickly and a guy's new and you're hard on the guy, like that guy can tune you out really quickly, right? I also think if there's frustration with the results, then that can cause you to chafe against it too. Like, if a guy comes in and he's tough on his players, I think his window to win is shorter because those players are going to be quicker. Like, you have to win faster if you're going to be that way, you know? And so, I don't know. I just think Brady and Belichick, it's just there's such a background of, like, this works, you know, that other people don't have, where if you're going to make this uncomfortable for someone or you're going to be hard on someone, then you know, you have to give them results within a certain time frame or else you're going to lose them.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, yeah, I just think, God, if you're Matt LaFleur and you're taking a peek at that. Like,
right.
Oh, I mean, like, if you're Matt LaFleur, like, and here's the thing, like, I think the hard thing is, it's like, you have to, and Aaron Rodgers, we heard a lot about, I'm going to talk about Josh Rosen in a little bit, but I think Josh Rosen is this way, and this was a knock on him, right? I think Jay Cutler's always been this way. So there's been, like, examples of it working and not, but Aaron Rodgers is very much like a why guy. Like, why am I doing that? Why? Like, so I think that that's going to be part of the key with LaFleur is, like, listen, if you do this and this and this, then like you'll get these results. Like this is the results that Matt Ryan got. This is the results that Jared Goff got. This is the results that Marcus Mariota got. And so I think that that's got to be a big part of it. The thing that I think is going to be interesting here, that system takes stuff off the quarterback's plate. Like that's how Sean McVay fixed Jared Goff. Like that's how, like if you look at it, that's how they got Matt Ryan playing really fast in Atlanta. They give a lot of the protection calls to the center. They make things simpler on the quarterback. They want him playing fast, right? Like that's the whole idea of it. And so that part of it's going to be interesting too, right? Like if you think about that, like if the whole idea is to take things off the quarterback's plate, like let's just get the guy playing fast. And now you've got this guy who's got all of this, who's had all of this control forever. Wouldn't you think that that would maybe be something they're going to have to at least work through? You know?
Yeah. If you're used to having a lot on your plate and then there's less on your plate, you know.
Not going
to
be a happy camper.
That's
you're
tough.
Speaking from personal experience? Now I'm just everything relates this is becoming back like a, to like we're, the we're, Connor Orr. Like the,
we're Connor psychiatrists.
The life and times of Connor Orr.
I'm privately just seething at all of you and I'm just like,
I
yeah,
know, I'm
just
a little bit concerned.
Letting out like minor gripes. Yeah. Yeah.
So do you think it works? I mean, I don't know. Like, what, do you guys think this, like, if you're Matt LaFleur, how do you make this work?
It's hard to visualize. Yeah. And that was always the question with the high. I mean, maybe it will work. It's just hard to visualize.
Yeah. That's why I thought like hiring an Adam Gase or Josh McDaniels would have been really interesting.
Adam Gase made a lot of sense there
because
for
both
me.
Those guys have worked with that level of quarterback, so they have experience. Like Gase worked with Manning, and obviously McDaniels worked with Brady, and so I think those two guys would have been at least interesting because, at the very least, if you're Rodgers in that situation, you gotta say, okay, well, this guy made Peyton Manning better. This guy made Tom Brady better. Like I probably should listen to him. So.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting interesting marriage.
Okay, who wants to take news topic number two? Why don't you take this, Connor? This is up your alley.
Since the Alliance of American Football suspended operations last week, over 30 alumni of the league have signed with NFL teams. Neither founder Charlie Ebersol nor majority owner Tom Dundon have spoken publicly yet on the shutdown. So, yeah, I mean, I think that the sad thing here is a lot of players had had a shot at something that they thought was
working.
It was working. And, you know, what's interesting is we all heard the stories about Memphis in particular, right, where the hotel had kicked the players out and it seemed totally chaotic. But, you know, in talking to, you know, dozens of players since then, I mean, you know, there are players still living in their hotels, that were paid through the end of April or whatever it is. You know, there's still guys working out at the same places. And so it's weird. Like, I think it was just that, like, the abruptness of the shutdown that caused, like, what we're looking at now. But I will say this, like, there's going to be a lot, I think, that we're going to learn about the league in the coming weeks, months, years. A lot of fun legalese and court battles and stuff like that. But, I think you have to, you know, give a nod to the fact that like
it was like the actual like the mission of the league. Like,
well, just the fact that so many of them are on rosters. I mean, it's not it's not a bad
deal.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like the mission of the league. And
should your exit plan have been better? Absolutely.
We can talk 100%. About the gambling app, but that obviously that's the business side of it. But like the functional mission of the league was to be a developmental league, and it worked because you have over 30 guys now who are on NFL rosters. I've sort of like looked at this as like, I don't know, Jenny, this is like a movie set to me. You know what I mean? Like, it's, if you're far away and you look at it, it's like, oh, that looks pretty good. Like, you had the CBA, like the uniforms looked like sort of like NFL uniforms. The broadcast looked good. And if you went to the training camp, from what I understand, like the training camp, they went over the top spending at the training camp. Like, there was, like, it was nice. The players were accommodated, all that different stuff. But when you get close up to it, you start to see, okay, like, I know that like travel was like had to be cleared through like a lot of different people, and then not everybody was on the trips. Even small expenditures were an issue. Like, and then you get, once Dundon buys it, Dundon starts to see it for what it is, and I think he cut back a lot, and then all of a sudden it became even more uncomfortable for everybody. It's just like, I feel like it feels to me, and Connor, you've done more reporting on this than I have, so I'd like to hear what you have to say about it, but it feels to me like so much was put into making it look good and to making it look a certain way that, like, the actual foundation wasn't there, right?
Yeah. Well, I think it's interesting. I mean, this is what Charlie Ebersole said when the league started was that, you know, there wasn't an expectation of profitability. You invested like a tech company, right?
Right.
So you would expect losses for the first 3 years, and then, you know, and then you would eventually be able to cash in. But I think the reality of the world that we live in, and a lot of people, you know, there are people used to making quick money and there are people used to making long money. Yeah. And Tom Dundon was a quick money guy, and it just wasn't the right marriage, I think, for that league in general.
Right. And that's like what the question is now, right? Is what was the plan for the financing?
Right.
And, you know, yep, what were the issues that so soon on in the season, what was it, week two that Dundon came on?
Mm-hmm.
And you would figure that you would make it through to the end of the year, play the championship game, and then perhaps reassess from there. So what exactly was so dire that they couldn't even make it that far? That there was an issue week two, and then there was Dundon comes on, and all of a sudden they don't even make it to the end of that first season. So I think there's so many questions about what the plan was going in.
No doubt. And just the sad part, you know, I talked to a player the other day. It's like, you know, I had, you know, there were guys at my hotel. They said guaranteed 3-year contracts, right? You know, there are guys with a wife and two kids in those hotels. You know what I mean? People move their families to these places. And that's the sad part for me, is like people really saw this as a last minute option to get back into the league, but also is something like, hey, if the NFL doesn't work out, you know, there's all these big plans for this, you know what I mean? I can make $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 a year playing the game I love, and this is all I know how to do, and so this is great, you know? And so I think that's ultimately one of the saddest parts of this.
Yeah, and I think one of the things we can take that, like, I think we learn from a positive standpoint is that there probably is a need for this. Like, there probably is, like this can be something that, like, the function of it, like, the idea that you can develop players, maybe you can find a player who slipped through the cracks, like, there's a real need for it in football. And in other sports, minor leagues exist because they're funded by the leagues, right? Like, Major League Baseball, like, those minor league teams are all funded by the major league teams, right? The NHL, they fund their minor leagues. The basketball, I believe the NBA, the G League, I think, is funded by the NBA, right? So, like, if the NFL is not going to do it, I just, that's the hard part, is like, I don't know how the business of it works. They did it for a little while with NFL Europe. Then they figured out, whoa, like, this isn't going to be, we can't get the kind of return we want to get over there, so screw it. If the NFL is not willing to run the league itself, I think it's going to have to be like, all right, like, you're going to have to back Canada or something else. Like, there's going to have to be some other way to do it, because clearly, like, it's very, very difficult if you don't have the league on board. And clearly at the end, like, that was the lifeline, I think, that, like, Ebersole and Dundon and everybody else was looking for.
Yeah, a lot of pressure on the XFL now. I mean, you know, if you look at kind of what's going on over there, I don't think they have all their coaches in yet. You know, I think it'd be interesting to take a look at, you know, some of the stadium deals that they signed and kind of their overhead. I mean, is it significantly less than the Alliance of American Football? Are they spending more money than the Alliance of American Football? So a lot of pressure on them right now, I think, especially when, you know, their launch is coming up too. So,
and they have said that their eligibility requirements will not be the same as
exactly
the NFL. So that's an interesting wrinkle.
Smaller
like
pool.
We saw, you know, Bleacher Report talk to Justin Ross, the Clemson receiver, and he said, well, he wouldn't make that decision. It would be hard for 18 and 19 year olds to turn down $200,000, which is what Oliver Luck had told some agents that the premier players could get in the XFL. So it will be interesting to see if leagues like that.
I think that potentially could attract a crowd, right? Like that, like, if you're gonna do that, like, and it may only be guys for a year, right? But maybe you say to a guy coming out of his true sophomore year, right, come play in the XFL this spring, we'll pay you $150,000, whatever, right? We'll
right
pay you $150,000. So there's that. You don't have to go to school. You can spend a year getting ready for the combine. You can get endorsement money. Like, so you're giving them all of that. And you go for, like, the big names that made their name in college football. So you've got ready-made stars, right? So that is something I think could work. The timing is a little funny because can you ask those kids coming out of a college season, okay, now, like, a month
right
later, start playing again, you
yeah
know? The benefit is on the back end of it, they would have the whole fall to get ready for the combine, the draft, and everything else. So I think there might be something there.
You're right. The timing is very funny. But, you know, that came up when I talked to Adrian Peterson for the story we did on guys who could go one and done. You know, obviously that's just a hypothetical at this point. But, you know, I asked him what he thought about these leagues, this league or the Pacific Pro League, which is also different eligible, but that's specifically for non-NFL eligible guys as a developmental league. So these are two different options, guys. Potentially could have in 2020. Both leagues are supposed to launch in 2020. And Peterson said, well, it depends on how much they would get paid in these leagues. And he goes, you know, I could get a full scholarship and have to stay in a dorm room. Like, I think I might take the $200,000 and do it that way. So, you know, it's interesting to hear different players' perspectives on it. Like, it would be something that would be an option. And it might be something where if college is not the route that you want to take necessarily, which is fine. Like, a lot of people feel that way. You could get paid and then still have the opportunity to go to the NFL.
I think the flip side of it is that there
– college football is almost, in a lot of cases, is worth
– I think – well, if we're being honest about it, there are players getting paid in college football. Like, there are players getting paid in college football. And, like, and I think that the other part of it is, like, there is value for these guys in being, again, like we talked about with Juju, like the king of campus, right? So you're going to be asking these guys to go from being basically celebrities and being heroes where they're at, right? To, like, going into, like, what I think would be, like, being relatively anonymous compared to that. Not anonymous, but you wouldn't have all the trappings of being a college athlete.
You're on a bus. You're staying at a La Quinta with a roommate. You know what I mean? Like, this is not sexy. And, you know, the two things that the one upside, right, is that it eliminates, you know, a scout or a personnel person being able to say that you don't know how to play in a pro-style offense.
Right.
But what hurts it is, you know, I think that half of the alliance were good coaches, you know what I mean? And then I think half of them, you know, I mean, were replacement guys. Like, you know, there were coaches that quit, like, the first day, you know what I mean? And you had to replace them on the fly. But, like, you know, is a coach really looking at a player that's learning a Steve Spurrier offense right now? You know what I mean?
Right. And the other thing is, like, that's all driven by money, too.
Right.
Because, like, it's like that part's definitely driven by money, because it's like if Nick Saban's making $9 million a year, right, and, I don't know, like, Dabo Swinney is making $7 or $8 million. Like, those guys aren't leaving college football to come coach in the XFL.
No.
So, I mean, you're still going to have, like, the best coaches are still going to be in the NFL and major college football. And so that part of it definitely is an issue. It would be an issue.
Right. And we spoke to some GMs about this at the league meetings, and as we were reporting the story, one of the GMs said it's for a lot of guys it's worth more to go to college, because you have to think about the long term of where your draft stock is going to be and the potential difference if you don't go to a major college program. So there would be a lot of unknowns, but it would be another potential option. So should we move on to the next topic?
We have breaking news. Tom Brady says he's off Twitter now. Darren Revelle chased him away. Just so you guys know,
is this
right here.
Fake Akbar?
It might be. No. It's not fake Akbar.
Is he saying that Darren Revelle's account is so bad that he decided to quit Twitter?
I think so. This is great podcasting here. So I guess Revelle had a one shining moment. Something.
Oh, I saw that.
I didn't see it. Did you see what was in it?
Like, he just kind of was like dancing in an empty office to One Shining Moment.
Oh, all right.
God. So then Brady, the greatest Brady burn?
Brady just crushed him and said he's leaving Twitter.
But you have to do it now. You have to shut the account down.
That would be great.
You literally have to shut the account down.
As of 12:29, on Tuesday, Tom Brady's account is still active.
Tom, shut the account
down. If he shuts the account down, that would be fantastic.
Listen, Tom Brady has had, you know, a pretty good career, but this may be his single greatest achievement.
What, like,
turning
like
the world against Twitter. If Tom Brady did that, that would be worth more than any Super Bowl.
Bang the shutdown
button. So you're saying Revelle's just collateral damage then?
Yeah. My thing is, like, I just want Twitter to end. Tom Brady seems to have fired the first salvo.
Yeah, he's nice enough, but just bang it. Bang the whole thing.
Versus Twitter.
Tom versus Twitter! Yes!
All right. Jenny, news item number 3.
Right, now I'm a little, you know, okay. Got to get my phone up after this breaking news. All right. Topic number 3. With 2 weeks left until draft weekend, the quarterback picture remains jumbled, outspread of the widespread presumption that Oklahoma's Kyler Murray will go first overall. Ohio State's Dwayne Haskins, Missouri's Drew Locke, and Duke's Daniel Jones remain in the first round mix. So I think this is an interesting class. And Connor, what did you say the other day on one of our text chains? Basically said that there's no like surefire thing. There's just a lot of confusion around this year's draft, perhaps more so than like there's no like Giants are taking Saquon Barkley at number two, right, which everyone was telegraphed for months. Right?
I had a GM tell me that on Saturday, for them, the second round starts at the 12th pick.
Interesting.
Because there are less, there's fewer, not less, bad grammar usage there.
Yeah, there's fewer guys who have that sort of grade.
Like, yeah, and, you know, like you said, the Saquon Barkley thing. Like, I remember, like, 4 years ago, every single mock draft had, like, Sheldon Rankins going 12 to the Saints. You know what I mean? And you didn't, you know, it was just, okay, he's going to the Saints. You know what I mean? Yep. And everybody knew it. And this year, it feels like there is none of that. There could be five quarterbacks that go in the first round.
The first two, I think... Like Kyler and Bosa seem like it seems like there's that, but after that you're right, yeah.
But if the Cardinals throw a curveball, I guess you never know.
They're playing their cards close to the vest.
We're gonna get to the Cardinals in a minute. We're gonna get to
But it feels like there's a lot of uncertainty, and probably that's because, you know, well, I don't really know.
I'm gonna be a homer here. All right. I'm gonna be a homer here.
Oh boy.
I don't like know how.
OHIO?
I don't know. I don't know how anybody like, and I mean this, this is my genuine opinion. All right, like because I knew Drew Lock was going to be a high pick. I tried to watch him a bunch in the fall. Right.
Right.
And I watched every snap of Haskins. I don't know how anybody could think Drew Lock's a better player than Dwayne Haskins. If you watch the two of them side by side, Drew Lock looks like to me, like the guy where you see flashes of it. And I remember somebody saying this to me about Blake Bortles. Right. Like, you see everything you need to see, but it takes a lot of tape to get there. And I thought that was the perfect way to explain, like, Blake Bortles coming out. Like, I had a quarterbacks coach say that to me. And it was like, and the point was, like, if you, like, put together, like, a three-minute highlight tape, it's all there, right? But and if that's all you watch, you're like, that guy's great. But in between, there's a lot of inconsistency. And, like, that's what it feels like Drew Lock's a little bit. Like he feels like he's that guy to me, which... Like Blaine Gabbert, I think, was that way. Blake Bortles is that way. I don't know how anybody could have watched Drew Lock and Dwayne Haskins and said to themselves, and I may look so stupid for saying this in 3 years, but I don't know how anybody could have watched the two of them and thought Locke's a better player than Haskins. Daniel Jones, I'll admit, I haven't seen enough of him. And I know there's a lot of, like, the people that I talk to, there's a lot of varying opinions on him. It's just weird that way, you know? And I think this class is a lot like 14, like a lot like the 14 class, and that you don't know how they're going to come off the board.
Yeah, that's what I was stammering over my words before, but I think a big reason for that is because there's a lot of uncertainty surrounding the quarterbacks because they're all very different styles, and it seems as though opinions vary widely among them, and there are a lot of people who don't really like anyone in particular, or last year there were a lot of quarterbacks, but I think everyone pretty much felt like, yes, five will go in the first round. That was not a shock when it happened because, you know, there were a lot of teams that needed them, and there were certain teams connected to guys, and you felt like, you know, you could sort of slot things. And this year it seems like, what is the quarterback's true value? Some of these guys we've mentioned, people have said to me, they're actually no better than a second round talent,
right,
but they're going to get drafted in the first round. So I think that's perhaps why we're having a harder time divining.
Because that's the way the position works.
That's the way the position works,
And, you know, I think the way this always works, Connor, is like what happens is, like, I think teams will put like they could have a second round grade on a quarterback, and then they'll talk themselves into it, and they'll be like, well, like if he's a second rounder, we see him as a starter. And then it's like, okay, like, so if we're going to take him in the second round, then we might as well take him at the bottom of the first round. So maybe we trade up for him. And it's like, well, if we're willing to take him at the bottom of the first round, why would we risk losing him? And then all of a sudden they get pushed all the way up.
Right. Well, there's the two different tracks, right, which is your grade. But then there's also the perception of positional value. And quarterback is the most valuable position. And so how does that alter your grade, or how does it factor into the grade in the first place? You know.
Right.
I think in fairness to Jenny and I, like, you should give us a little time to talk up Eric Dungy and Trace McSorley a little bit, you know?
Eric Dungy,
biggest combine snub of the, you know, led my Orange and Dino Babas. Little
Eric Dungy
revolution.
Was a pretty good player, yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, you know? And I will say this about Trace McSorley. I hated watching him play against Ohio State, which is like the highest compliment.
You could never count him out.
Yeah,
he was a tough little guy.
I could see as many as seven first-round quarterbacks, you know.
We'll just add those
just
two
tack
into
those
mix.
Two under the bottom.
That's
back
right.
How about
the
Trace?
Thank you, Connor. Thank you.
How about Trace McSorley going to the Patriots as a slot receiver?
I mean,
no, come on.
That would be so perfect.
That would be so. Yeah, you know, I was just talking to Rick Goslin the other day, and we were talking about the Edelman situation where, you know, Edelman had these you know, great numbers at Kent State, and he told a bunch of teams, seven, and Belichick was the only one who listened.
That's, wow.
Because, you know, Belichick had said that, that Goslin had given him the heads up on it. But I didn't know the part that he said he told several teams about it, and Belichick was the only one that followed through. Yeah.
That's pretty good. Okay, news item number four. Late last week, the Cowboys came to terms on a five-year, $105 million deal with defensive end DeMarcus Lawrence. The contract is the first of a slew Dallas has to take care of this offseason with Dak Prescott, Zeke Elliott, Amari Cooper, Byron Jones, and Jalen Smith all going into contract years. Elliott does have the fifth-year option in 2020. Jalen Smith, I believe, is going to be a restricted free agent after this year. So they're not all like, we have to do it right now, but they're all sort of on the Cowboys' plate. And one of the reasons I want to talk about this one is I think, like, a lot of times we bash Jerry for the being the GM, but I actually look at this and like, isn't this proof that they're doing a pretty good job of putting a team together? Did they, like, because you look at like yeah, they've got a little bit of a cap crunch going on, but the cap crunch is happening because they've gotten a lot of these right.
He's also allowed to take risks that no other general manager is allowed to take because he's never going to lose his job.
Because he's the owner, right?
You can draft Jalen Smith in the second round because you're not worried about getting fired the next year. You know what I mean? You can take Dak Prescott and throw him under center and see what happens and not have another adequate backup on the roster. Yeah. And so you can kind of pinball around and, like, you know, it's been bad too. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and
or roll the dice on Amari Cooper.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you can do all this stuff because nobody's going to come up and fire you. You know what I mean? And you don't have to put it through the same sort of risk assessment, I think, car wash that a lot of other these GMs do.
Yeah.
That being said, I mean, you know, you do have to give him, you know, a little bit of a nod because, you know, the switch from sort of these mercurial draft picks to patching up an offensive line over the course of a couple years, you know, I think showed a little bit of foresight, you know, especially trying to take care of Romo at the end of his career, ended up benefiting Dak Prescott a lot early in his career. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think some of those moves were good, but I think they're also totally unique to Dallas where, you know, how many other GMs, how far would
Lawrence, have Jalen... Lawrence was a risk guy coming out too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Randy Gregory, you know, there's a lot of guys that he took too that, you know, who knows?
Yeah.
It's interesting getting this deal done now. I mean, I think, you know, oftentimes you see these things go right to the deadline.
Yeah, and I think you got to give, I mean, his agent who I talked to over the weekend about this, like, I think you got to give them credit for being creative and refusing to do the shoulder surgery, which whether or not, like, he really would have gone through with it, like, who knows, but they at least put that threat out there where it was like, yeah, well, you know, he's on a $20 million tag. And by the way, like, you want him to get his shoulder fixed. Like, we're not going to do that right now. Like, we're not going to get his shoulder fixed right now. So if you want him to get his shoulder fixed and be ready to go, you've got to do the deal in time for him to go through the entire rehab process.
Right.
Which I thought was smart. I mean, I thought it was an interesting way of creating leverage for players where there oftentimes isn't a ton of leverage.
Sure.
With a body part that you often use for leverage.
There you go.
Bam.
Connor's on fire today.
I'm going to write that down for the 11 a.m. note.
All right. News item number five. Who wants to take it?
I got it up here. Josh Rosen reported to the Cardinals' offseason program on Monday amid speculation that he'll be traded before the NFL draft. The 10th overall pick in the 2018 draft is going into the second year of his rookie deal, and it's under contract for the next 3 years at a total of $6.24 million. I'm the only one who just doesn't want him to get traded, and I want them to I want them to botch the trade deal, and I want them to end up with two of these guys on the roster at the same time. I think it would be fantastic.
And they both, like, there were personality questions about both of them. Like, that could be, like,
if I'm another team, call their bluff, because if he's available before the draft, and you're definitely taking Kyler Murray, he's sure as hell going to be available after the draft,
and
too.
It's going to be hard to trade him after. Like, here's the thing. Like, if you're them, like, you almost have to, like, create this small window when you trade. Like, it'd have to be, like, the 48 hours before the draft. Here's why. I think you want to, like, use every day that you have to make sure that everything you've got on Kyler Murray, like, nothing comes out before the draft or whatever, right? So I think you want to go through all of that with Kyler Murray. You want to use every minute that you have to make sure you're right, because that's the way top 10 picks are. You have to make sure you get them right. On the flip side, if you're going to trade Josh Rosen in 2019, you know what? If you wait till after the draft, Dwayne Haskins is going to be on a team. Daniel Jones is going to be on a team. Drew Locke's going to be on a team. Like, you're legitimately going to have, I think, at least three teams that may have been suitors before.
And more than that, I mean, you know, I think Tyree Jackson's probably going to be a legitimate third or fourth round pick that's going to be a number two somewhere.
I mean, like Will Greer, like Ryan Finley, you can go down the list. There are legitimately other teams that would think, like, we could use a young quarterback. Maybe this is a solution who, in 3 weeks, are going to be like, no, we don't need one. We just drafted this guy.
Yeah.
So it's a tricky spot. Like, do you trade him?
It's very tricky, and given the way that the Combine press conference was botched, it doesn't give you a lot of confidence that they're necessarily going to navigate this the right way.
Right. I mean, the for now thing was really crappy.
really crappy, and probably not intentional. There cannot be any way that was intentional.
I don't think it was planned. I think it was just one of those things came out of his mouth.
Exactly. Yeah. So that just sort of threw a lot of things up into the air. And I agree with you, Connor. Like, if you're another team that's interested in him, especially because most of the suitors appear to be teams that don't necessarily have to get a guy right now. Well, because most of the quarterback situations are settled anyway. So it's not like you're trying to buy low on a guy. So you've got all the leverage, the Cardinals.
Yeah. The only way that they save this, the only way, is if this was a masterful ploy, right? And that Cliff Kingsbury wanted picks to start his new tenure, and he's like, we have too many holes on offense, and I need five guys and not one guy. And you get someone like Oakland or whoever, like, hot enough to actually trade up to the number one pick. Like, if that actually worked, and you did bluff your way through that, and Rosen was somehow involved in that, like, God bless you, that's amazing. But if not, you are creating almost a zero leverage situation.
Right. The one thing that I will say, like, this is a difficult situation to be in. And I think I've said this before. Like, hiring Cliff Kingsbury was a huge swing, right? Like, huge swing. And so, and I'm probably going to sound like a broken record to you guys here, but, like, if you are going to hire the guy who just got fired at Texas Tech, like, and I think he's got the ability to be a good NFL coach, but that, there's no question it was a big swing. If you are going to put yourself out there and take that swing, and then a month later that guy tells you, Kyler Murray is my guy, like, if you don't take him, I think you're creating a problem for yourself. Like, you're creating, like, an issue for yourself right off the bat with a guy that you took a huge risk on to begin with.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I think if Cliff says this is my guy, I think you have to take him. And not even because I want to see the world burn, although that's maybe a benefit here. I sort of want to see the idea, could a team take two quarterbacks? We heard about the Browns, like, potentially, like, tossing that around last year when they had the first and fourth picks, right? Like, wouldn't that be sort of interesting too? Like, the idea, like, you take two and then, you know, you let them compete and one of them wins the job. And if one of them wins, and then all of a sudden maybe you've got some value in trading the other one. I don't know. Like, that part of it, like, that to me would be fascinating just to see that.
Yeah. I just think that Rosen's value maxed out probably about 3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, it's driving a new car. I mean, well, the other thing is, I think there's also, like, it's also just the driving the new car off the lot. You know what I mean? Like, once you draft a guy, like, I think he immediately, almost always, those guys, like, lose some value just because they're not being drafted into your program, you know?
I don't know. This is looking like they're down to their last few chips in poker here.
TikTok. Yeah. We got 15 days to go, I think. On Wednesday, it'll be 15 days, right?
This morning, it was 15 days. So as of Tuesday morning.
No, that'd be 16, because 2 weeks is 14 days.
Hold on. Let me go to draft countdown.
I'm in the...
It's 16 days.
16 days on
from
Tuesday.
From Tuesday and 15 days from Wednesday, 14 days from Thursday.
Right.
Because Thursday is 2 weeks.
Right. But I don't...
That may have cost you a spot in the 11 a.m. note tomorrow.
Gosh darn it. You're right. As of right now, 16 days, 7 hours, 15 minutes, and 20 seconds.
That's it, Connor. You're not making the 11 a.m. note tomorrow?
God.
We'll try again next week.
There's always next week.
All right, guys. All right, we're going to jump right into the six-pack here. You guys know exactly how this works because you listen every week, as you should. Every week on Tuesday, I put the call out for questions on Twitter. If I pick yours, you will be one of six that I answer here on the podcast, part of the six-pack, and I'll give you a like on Twitter. That means I hit that little heart there. Question number one from Renee Bunger, or Bugner, Rainbow Cave, at RNBWCV. Appreciate you always coming out, Renee. You're always asking the questions. Your question this week: Germany was once rumored, dating back to 2014 or 15, to be the next destination for an NFL regular season game. Since then, Mexico got several games, and now China seems to be a candidate for a game in 2020. What is holding a game in Germany back? Any update? Thanks. I would just tell you that I think there are two things holding it back. Okay. Number one, the NFL thinks they've already got you. The NFL is popular in Germany. Germany's gotten to the point where they're producing players. Like, the NFL fully believes that it has Germany as a viable market. And so I don't know that the growth potential there is the same as it is in a place like London, the same as it is in a place like China. Mexico City to me is different because logistically you don't have to do a ton to get there, right? Like, it's not five time zones away, six time zones away. You don't have to build, you don't have to like structure your schedule around it. So, you know, the way the NFL set these up is they want to, you know, they'll pick one city, they'll try to build out, and they've done that in London, and then try to use that template in other places. I just don't know that the growth potential in Germany is what it is in other places, because you're not going from zero there the same way you're going from zero in other places. Number two, I've just heard the television distribution is an issue, and the television distribution makes it less profitable for them to be over there. So those would be the two things. Question number two from Josh Allen, that's at LivestrongRyRy. If you combined the quarterbacks from the 16, 17, and 18 in this year's classes, how would you rank them if you were starting a franchise tomorrow? Mahomes, Wentz, Baker, Josh Allen, Darnold, Kyler, Goff, Trubisky, Rosen. That's nine quarterbacks. Josh, I will give this a little bit of thought. What would you say, Brandon? 5 minutes of thought? Less than that? Probably 2.5 minutes of thought. So I didn't put a ton of thought into it, but I did want to rank them for you. Number nine, Mitch Trubisky. I think you're a little limited with him. I'm not sure the high-end potential is there as much. That'd be number nine. Number eight, Kyler Murray. I still have concerns about his height and his durability. We only saw him for 1 year in college. And so I think he's got high-end potential. But it's just such an outlier going with a player like that who it just built completely different than anything we've seen work at the position. Number seven, and I'd sort of tie him with Kyler, is Josh Allen, who's the opposite, right? Big, durable, but not as productive and hasn't shown as much production over the years. Also has high-end potential. Number six, Jared Goff, who I think is like a little bit of a system guy with McVay, but clearly has really good arm talent, has shown you can win with him, has played big in big spots, has shown toughness, has really, really played well when the lights are on. So I think Jared Goff would be number six. Number five, Josh Rosen. The reason I put him over Goff, I think there's a little more high-end potential there. Number four, Sam Darnold. I really like Darnold. I like the makeup of Darnold. I like the fact that Darnold's got so much untapped potential. He's still kind of raw as a prospect. Number three, Carson Wentz. We've seen where the high-end for Carson Wentz is. The question with him is going to be health, but we've seen him play at an MVP level. Number two, Baker Mayfield. I love Baker Mayfield. I think he's in a lot of ways where the game's going, you know, and talking to Trent Dilfer about this both that last week and then, you know, a year ago, he trains all these guys coming out of high school. He knows a lot of them, has known a lot of them since they were 16, 17 years old. He said the game's become more about precision and torque. Where it used to be about power and stature. And so that's Baker Mayfield to me. So much energy in his body, the way that he plays, very exciting style, different style. And then number one, I think, is fairly easy, is Patrick Mahomes. Not only has he been an MVP, but, you know, you see the potential for a lot more growth there. The right kind of kid, like, checks every single box. And so he's the kind of kid that I think has the potential, not just to be a really good quarterback in the NFL, which, you know, I think all of these kids have that potential. He's got the potential to be the kind of guy who can carry a team and who can make up for deficiencies. And to me, that's the rarest category. That's like what Brady and Rodgers have been, like where you can make up for deficiencies around you. I think it's very hard to find guys like that. I think Patrick Mahomes, he isn't there yet because we've seen him with a really good team around him. Great offensive line. He was throwing last year to Tyreek Hill, had a good running game behind him. But I think he's got the potential, Travis Kelce. I think he's got the potential to be the kind of guy who can actually carry a team and make up for deficiencies. Question number three from Marco. That's at MarkyBoy2305. Number three is from Paul Jones. That's at JonesPaulR. How useful has the AAF film been to NFL teams? Has a chance to shine, elevated the stock of otherwise overlooked players? Should scouting departments not know how good these players are? I think the problem is a lot of times you get these guys in a practice setting and you don't know what they can do when they're playing full games, even in the preseason, because all of that is so scripted. And so to get them in real game situations, I think gives different context to some of these players, which is really, really good. Like, I think that that really did the NFL teams a service and did these players a service. And so I think you see the need for a league that's played under NFL circumstances. The Canadian League's a little bit different with the rules and everything else, and is played a little differently up there. The Arena League's different. This was a game. These were games played under NFL rules. You got to see those guys in an NFL game context. I think that really did add something to the evaluation for a lot of these teams, and there's proof positive of it, and you see that there are 30 guys that have signed with different teams at this point. Question number four from Zach Reyes. That's at Zach_Reyes07. What can the Jets realistically get if they move out of three? Ideally, they would want more than what they gave up last year. I know the prospects aren't as good, but it's a bad look if you move out and get less than what you gave up a year ago. I don't think there's any chance they get what they got, what the Colts got from them a year ago, which was, you know, 3 second round picks to move up, to move down three spots. That is, I mean, it might have been four. That is not happening this year. I think if they can find a way to get back the second round pick they lost, and then maybe get another pick on top of that, to me that would be a win. You don't have a quarterback that's going to – I don't think you have a quarterback that's going to help you generate the kind of market you need to generate to get the kind of haul the Colts got last year. And so maybe the quarterbacks get hot late. I'm not counting on it. Question number five is from Bears Rules, at Bears Brazil Fan. Do you think the buzz about Haskins falling in the draft is true? If so, would he be a good fit for the Patriots? I almost never think that the buzz about players falling is true. I think more often than not what happens is when you hear about guys' stock going up or stock going down, it's all of us on the outside sort of learning what teams think of these guys. And so we're sort of catching up to where the NFL community is on them. I do think that it's a crapshoot as far as these guys go, and it's like 2014 where you didn't know what order Blake Bortles and Johnny Manziel and Teddy Bridgewater and Derek Carr and Jimmy Garoppolo were going to go in. The lesson you can take from 2014, the two best players in that class actually wound up being the 2 second rounders, Jimmy Garoppolo and Derek Carr. Question number six. This is from Ricker81. That's at D_Ricker81. Chances the Giants do not take a quarterback at 6 or 17. I think they're halfway decent. The player I've heard them connected to most at that position is Daniel Jones. I've also heard that they are going to take a defensive lineman with at least one of those two picks. I've sort of heard – now, the buzz you hear is that they're going to wait till 17 and maybe take Jones there. I just think, again, it's the whole thing Connor and I were kind of discussing earlier on. If you think enough of a quarterback to take him with a 17th overall pick, you are staking your job security to the guy, right? Like, if you take a quarterback in the first round, you are literally staking your job security to the guy. So if you're willing to stake your job security to the guy, are you willing to take the risk of losing him by not taking him at six? That's the part that, like, I think is a little tough, right? Like, if you're going to take a quarterback in the first round, you don't want to risk losing him because you think that highly of him. And so I think there's a chance they take a quarterback at six. I think there's a chance that quarterback's Daniel Jones. Gettleman keeps his cards close to the vest. We'll see what happens. Okay, I appreciate you guys coming out. As always, I want your feedback. I loved hearing feedback the last couple of weeks, especially the stuff that's really interesting to me that you guys have talked about, where it's like this is a better way for you guys to get information than maybe the written product sometimes, because you can take that information while you're doing something out, which I appreciate, because that's how I get a lot of my information. I listen to NBA podcasts, college football podcasts, because it's hard for me to sit down and read about those sports, which I really enjoy watching. So I can actually listen while I'm maybe going for a run, while I'm driving, whatever it is. So I want more of that feedback from you guys so we can know how we can better serve you. I know Brandon would like to incorporate it into the podcast as well. So you can get me on my Twitter page with that, at Albert Breer, on my Facebook page, at Albert R. Breer, on my Instagram, at Albert_Breer. Always remember to listen to our podcast and the MMQB Monday Morning Podcast with Andy Benoit and Gary Gramlin. You can get us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn, Apple Podcasts, wherever you guys get your shows. Same time next week. We'll be a week out from the draft. We'll see you guys then.